Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you've driven through the far stretches of Northern California, you've likely come across the Klamath River. At roughly 250 miles long, it flows from the Cascade Mountains in southern Oregon through Northern California, where it reaches the Pacific Ocean just south of Crescent City. The Klamath River has long been a lifeline to indigenous communities, as well as the farmers, ranchers, miners, and fishermen that followed. But what once was home to one of the largest salmon populations on the West Coast has drastically been reduced to at times negligible levels, and this is driving a monumental restoration of habitat. Four dams along the Klamath are going to be removed. It's been called the largest project of its kind in U.S. history, and it is complicated, involving collaboration between two states, tribal communities, conservationists, and fisheries. A crucial piece is learning about the indigenous history and the suffering that led to this moment, and we'll have that conversation later in the show. But first, we're going to begin with the significance of this dam removal project. Mark Bransom is the CEO of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, which is leading the dam deconstruction project. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Vicky. Good to be with you.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty, how do you explain the Klamath Dam Removal Project simply to someone just learning about it for the first time, doesn't walk through the world of water infrastructure?
Yeah, well, I would describe it simply as an enormous, complicated civil infrastructure and environmental restoration project that involves a significant number of stakeholders and interested party that add to both the challenges and complexity, but also the rewards as we see the project begin to unfold. Mm.
This project is decades in the making, and that's even before formal agreements were made. So let's go back into the history a little bit. What was the main driver for this dam removal project?
Well, I believe if you go back to the early 2000s, one of the major catalysts for the project was the 2002 fish kill that resulted from low flows in the lower Klamath River and high temperatures that resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of returning salmon. And I believe it was really that threshold that catalyzed tribal members and tribal interests and others to begin to focus on ways to restore some balance to the Klamath River. And it's and a simple sort of very visible source of the impact was the hydroelectric project. These four dams. There has been increasing recognition over the decades that these dams have environmental, social, and cultural impacts. And I think the 2002 fish kill was really a catalyst for this focus.
The four dams that we're talking about, they're located east of I-5, right along the California-Oregon border. You mentioned that they were used for a hydroelectric project. They were built between like a 44-year span, between 1918 and 1962. Why isn't that hydroelectricity production needed anymore?
Yeah, well, the electric utility that previously owned and operated the dams did the economic analysis on the hydroelectric project when their license under the jurisdiction of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission expired. And they simply determined that they were bringing online sufficient additional generating capacity in their western operating region, and that this particular hydroelectric project, because it was rapidly approaching its lifespan, simply did not make economic sense. And when you couple that with the increasing awareness of the environmental and social and cultural impacts that the project has, it all added up to the interest and the discussions and negotiations that led to where we are today, which was to decommission the project.
And you are currently deconstructing these dams. I believe the first of four is currently underway this summer. When it's all completed, can you help us visualize how it will transform the river and the watershed?
Well, yeah, there are two or three major impacts, environmental impacts that the dams have had. Number one, they block migration of salmon and other species up and down the river. Number two, these reservoirs warm up in the summer. There's calm water, and they have impacts on water quality parameters. Third, they cut off the transport of important sediment and other nutrients and things that a healthy river system depend on. So when you look at really those three major things, those are all things that will be addressed by the removal of the dams and the restoration work that's going to be done to accompany the dam removal work. So really the goals are to improve water quality, restore some balance and natural processes to the river, and allow for the free volitional movement upstream and downstream of salmon and other species that historically have occupied this entire reach of the river, including all the way up to the headwaters of the Klamath River.
There are dams all over the country and, of course, all over California. And sometimes, or a lot, not maybe a lot of the times, you know, with these dams and reservoirs, you have communities that surround them, right? Because recreation is a component of that as well. Are there surrounding homes and businesses that will be directly impacted with the removal of these dams?
There are homes, a few businesses, but primarily residential properties that surround the reservoirs. And there is the potential for some of those residents to be impacted by the project. The Renewal Corporation set up a separate entity known as the Klamath Mitigation Fund, which has invited private property owners to come into a claims process for purposes of addressing some of the potential direct project impacts that may result from the project. And so a number of these private property owners are availing themselves of the claims process and receiving financial compensation to undertake certain mitigation measures that they may choose to do in advance of the project really getting underway so that they have plenty of time to build new structures or other things that they may choose to do in advance of the dam removal to try to offset any of the potential impacts.
On your website, it's written that the Klamath Basin, the watershed, is expansive. It covers 9.4 million acres. That's an area larger than 9 U.S. states. Is this a unique landscape for a dam removal project of this kind along the Klamath River?
Well, we know it's a unique landscape. I mean, you have only to look back to the, you know, historic number of runs of salmon that called the Klamath River home. You have only to look at the broad diversity of the communities that reside in the Klamath Basin and rely on a healthy, balanced river and ecosystem to make their living and to live their lives in the basin. So it's a very unique region, not only from an environmental perspective, but a social and cultural perspective as well. And so this is a very large and complex project. We're not aware of any other environmental restoration or dam removal project that has tackled removal of four dams and the restoration of almost 2,500 acres of land anywhere else in the United States, perhaps anywhere else in the world. So there are a lot of complexities given the nature of the landscape and the communities of people that live here.
Well, given that, you know, there's not a lot to compare this to in terms of the scale, what are the unknowns?
Well, there are a lot of unknowns, and we have certainly taken advantage of previous large landscape scale restoration activities and large dam removal projects that have been done before ours to try to take in lessons learned from those projects. But again, as we just discussed, this is a very unique landscape, and so we do face unique challenges. We have assembled a world-class team who bring experience in this landscape scale restoration and large civil engineering infrastructure projects and bring that experience to bear. We have brought expertise from other dam removals, from other large-scale restoration activities. We have relied significantly on our tribal partners to contribute traditional ecological knowledge to marry up with Western science and ecological restoration practices. And I think that really helps to elevate the plans that we have put in place and the work that we have already begun this year. So I'm optimistic that this combination that I just described really position us well to carry through the project. Of course, any large project like this will encounter unanticipated conditions, unforeseen things, but we've done a really exhaustive amount of work on scenario planning and contingency planning to prepare for both the known unknowns as well as the unknown unknowns. So I'm really optimistic that this a really incredible team that has been assembled to implement this project are ready to go. And we're already seeing this on the ground as we are well along with the removal of the first of the four dams.
This is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. I've seen some estimates at like $500 million. How is this being funded?
Yeah, that's just about the right number for the full implementation of the project. There are two primary sources of funding. The first is about $200 million of funding that has been contributed by PacifiCorp customers, of which I am one. Over the past number of years, PacifiCorp customers, PacifiCorp, of course, the previous owner and operator of the project, the electric utility, collected a surcharge on our electric bills specifically dedicated for Klamath Dam removal. The second major source of funding is about $250 million of funding from California's 2015 Proposition 1 water bond, a water bond that was passed for purposes of building new storage and doing environmental restoration work. And we've received $250 million. So we have a total of about $450 million and a little bit of additional money to ensure we are sufficiently capitalized to implement the full project.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Mark Bransom with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, which is leading the Klamath Dam Removal Project along the California-Oregon border. Okay, so you lead the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, or KRRC for short. This organization was created specifically for this project. Explain why this organization needs to exist.
Well, when the parties came together back in the early 2000s, all the way through roughly 2016, to talk about a potential mechanism to allow for the decommissioning of the project, the parties decided that it made sense to create a designated entity, pardon me, for purposes of doing the work. That is, the Renewal Corporation was formed for the specific and exclusive role of taking ownership of the hydroelectric project, including the dams and the powerhouses and all the appurtenant facilities, as well as the lands, and implementing the decommissioning after having obtained all the necessary permits and approvals and authorizations. And so it really was a way by which this very diverse group of stakeholders and signatories to the 2016 settlement agreement elected to put the responsibility in the hands of a nonprofit corporation who could see this through from beginning to end. And so far, the model seems to be working very, very well. We take our responsibilities very seriously. We are fully incorporated. We have a lean and mean staff. And as I described, we have an amazing team of contractors and consultants and attorneys who are helping us with every facet of the project. And when the project is complete, the Renewal Corporation will sunset folks will move on. But yes, we were created exclusively for the implementation of this project. And come 2030 or 2032, when we've met the terms and conditions of all of the permits and authorizations, we will fold up the tent and ride off into the sunset.
So people understand, I mean, when it comes to this corporation, the board of directors, there are a lot of arms to this. I mean, the members are appointed by both governors of California and Oregon. You have members that are appointed from the Karuk tribe and the Yurok tribe. You have members that are collectively appointed by conservation groups, as well as jointly by fisheries groups. When it comes to water issues, they rarely, if ever, come with unanimous consensus. What pushback have you received?
Well, I just have to comment that that we have an incredible board of directors, very diverse and very skilled, and they are laser focused on the successful implementation of this project. Their true North Star is delivering this project on time and on schedule and restoring volitional fish passage and seeing direct improvements in the land and water quality and the things that we are charged with doing. So internally, we are 110% aligned on our mission, and we are all pulling our oars in the same direction. And I'm very thankful to the board for their unanimous focus on doing this work and doing it well. There are opponents to the project and others who take a different view of the project, and I have deep respect for some of those perspectives. And yet, I think that the Renewal Corporation and the board and our project supporters have done a really good job of reaching out to these communities and to understanding the issues and concerns and working really hard to address those. At the end of the day, I think if people will take a long-term view of this project and attempt to envision what the outcomes could be with healthy river system where we have restored some balance, we have revegetation growing on the hillsides and fish returning. I think that people will appreciate the work, but I think it's going to take us a little while to get there to prove to folks that projects like this, can be done successfully.
Mark Bransom is the CEO of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. Thank you for making the time, Mark.
You're welcome, Vicki. Good to be with you today. Thank you.
His organization is leading the Klamath Dam Removal Project along the California-Oregon border, the largest dam removal project in U.S. history. Up next, we'll continue the conversation with the Shasta Indian Nation, who will share their tribal history that led to this moment. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We've been spending the show diving into a huge river restoration project taking place along the California-Oregon border. The Klamath Dam Removal Project is the largest of its kind in U.S. history. The removal of four dams along the Klamath River to restore the watershed has been years in the making officially, but has been driven by tribes for decades. There are several tribes that call this region home, and they are at the table as this dam removal project proceeds. We're going to learn more about the indigenous history and the suffering that led to this moment. Sammy Joe Diafontorum is a culture preservation officer with the Shasta Indian Nation, whose land sits under the Klamath Dam Removal Project. Sammy Joe, thank you for taking the time.
Good morning, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
I would love to begin by learning about the history of the Shasta people. Where would you like to begin?
Well, let's talk about the history of the Shasta people. That sounds good. So our tribe, historically, was located exactly where the dams are located. We were in the area known as Iron Gate by Bogus Creek, and as that land became unavailable, we moved up into the Copco Valley, and some of our people already lived in the Copco Valley. We're a tribe of about 300-350 members who are descendants of the people who lived in that area at Copco.
The four dams that were built over the span of a little over 40 years, between 1918 and 1962, they fundamentally changed the landscape, as we learned, and this is the land that your tribe called home. And what were the biggest ways in which the Shasta Indian Nation was shaped by these dams?
Oh, that's a big question. We were shaped in many, many ways. The area known as Copco right now, our people were displaced and the land taken by eminent domain in some instances in order for the dams to be built. How that changed our tribe, our traditional ceremonial site is submerged. So where we used to have our salmon ceremony, we have not had access to that. We've not had access to the land in general, to our traditional fishing area. Our people they dispersed. They're still around the county, but obviously we don't live underneath a reservoir. So I think for us, from a cultural perspective, I would say not having access to ceremony for a Native person, it's hard to describe what that feels like. A lot of people, when you grow up in ceremony, you have a different understanding of your place in the world as a Native person, and not having access to ceremony, I feel, has been emotionally and spiritually hard for our people.
Yeah, I would imagine when you talk to elders or just taking in the changes yourself over the years and the decades, I mean, there was an impact, obviously, physically, because your land was taken, homes, you know, through eminent domain were taken as well. But also what I'm hearing from you is it really like impacted and strained being able to retain your culture.
Correct. Correct.
When it comes to the tribes that were the driver of this project, I mean, there's a long, painful history, as you just briefly laid out. Was there a specific breaking point that you think that called tribes to action, to call for the restoration of the Klamath River and the removal of the dams?
Well, I don't want to speak for other tribes and what they may have been thinking, but I believe Mark covered it pretty well in his segment, that it was based in large part on the fish kill and the belief that the dams were responsible in large part for that.
You know, given that, you know, what Mark was talking about, I mean, that fish kill of tens of thousands of salmon, that was more than 20 years ago. I mean, it goes back to like 2001. And I understand that there's, you know, challenges and conflicts among various groups of people who call the Klamath Basin home that want, you know, at least at the end, the same goal of having a river restoration. And that's very complicated and it can be fraught at times. But is, I guess, can you help us understand a little why a project of this magnitude, and I understand that it's big, but it did take decades for it to break ground this year.
You're asking me why it took decades to break ground?
Yeah, is that sufficient for you? Or is that, I mean, since you've been part of these conversations and involvement over the years?
Well, we're not signatories to the dam removal agreements. And I just want to say our involvement and our stake is unique. Because we lived in the area known as COPCO and the Iron Gate, what they call the Reservoir Reach right now, that's like the new term for it. Part of what happened when the dams were built and the reservoirs created, it not only flooded villages, historic ceremony sites, we have burials there. And for us, all of this just brings back that, generational pain. It is incredibly difficult for our members. I think people have very mixed feelings about the work that's happening, and as we all want to see a healthy river, first and foremost, we think that's, you know, incredibly important. But it's hard to know that it's not an if or even a when at this point. It is a fact that burials are being disturbed. And just by way of context, I mean, if it were your grandfather and their burial were being disturbed, how would you feel about it? We don't love that. We also understand that that is part of what's happening as a result of this project. So we're trying to, you know, advocate for our interests and have our voice heard. But there's a very real consequence here for us, and this is also a spiritual and cultural issue because we don't disturb our burials. Some of the burials at COPCO had been moved in order for the project to happen, not the current project, but for the dams to be built. There are graves over in Hornbrook that are our burials that had been moved there for the dams to be built.
Yeah, it's as if, you know, you want the restoration of the river, but there's this inevitable trauma and pain that you once again will have to shoulder. You know, these are your ancestors, they are your family members, and there is a deep history and a pain that's attached to that. When you talk to other Shasta people about what is currently going on, because deconstruction of the first of the four dams is currently underway, what conversations are you having with each other? Because I completely understand the mixed feelings, but how do you kind of help each other get through it? Because it's a hard reality to take in.
It's really difficult. You know, our tribal council, they're amazing. And all of our elected officials descend from families who once called that area home. And so as we're watching the project happen, and some of these consequences are happening in real time, You know, they're hard conversations. They're just hard conversations. I feel, you know, the Renewal Corp and, you know, their contractors have been really great in trying to mitigate and avoid impact, but avoidance is just not possible. And so how do you reconcile that when it's burials? We don't have the answer to that. You know, you can't avoid the damage. And we're just hoping on the other side of this that it is, in fact, a healthy river, that some of those lands come back to our people, that we're able to have our ceremony again, ceremonies, and that, you know, people will again have a place to call home in that region.
Given that, I believe you said that, you know, during excavation, there have already been graves that have been disturbed or damaged. How does it work? How are you and the Shasta Indian Nation, you know, as a whole, how are you alerted when this happens?
Well, there's a couple of ways. The Renewal Corp's contractor, and actually Mark Branson, as soon as he was aware that this had happened, he reached out to me directly. We also do have cultural monitors on site who are observing, recording, and assisting the ARCE, well, we call them the ARCE staff, it's AECOM, in evaluating the on-the-ground conditions, I guess you'd say. So we were notified. We have written record of it. There is a process in place for how things happen once human remains are found. And the process is being followed. Is it satisfactory to me? Well, you know, the damage isn't satisfactory, but, you know, it is what it is. It's there and it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think even though you were prepared for this painful consequence, I don't know if there's really an adequate way to mentally prepare for it.
I agree with that. I think that it's one thing to have, you know, to have the understanding that this is going to happen. And we really struggled with this at the onset of the discussions. It's like, you know, we've really had to basically wrap our heads around a whole new possibility and thinking. Because we originally didn't want any part of anything that was going to damage our graves. It's, you know, those are sacred to Native people. And I was like, well, this project's going to happen whether we agree with it or disagree with it. So how do we put things in place to best protect our interests when these things happen? And, you know, again, I feel the Renewal Corp has been, you know, very responsive and respectful in how all of this is occurring. But it doesn't get less painful. It just doesn't. Just the thought of our burials being disturbed, Mark and any number of people that we've been in consultation with will tell you it is incredibly painful for us, and especially those of us that come from that area where, you know, our ancestors lived. It's like that could very well be one of my family members. You know, that's a tough one.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sammy Joe Diafontorum, a culture preservation officer with the Shasta Indian Nation, sharing her tribe's history on the land that sits under the Klamath Dam Removal Project, a river restoration project that is officially underway after decades in the making and is the largest dam removal project of its kind in U.S. history. What led for you to become the culture preservation officer for Shasta Indian Nation?
Oh, that's a good question. So I've been doing cultural resource work for my tribe since probably 1975 in different capacities. It's something that my family has always been involved in. My recently passed brother and my mother, they've been doing this work for decades. And I consider it a hereditary responsibility. And when this project started picking up, I want to say around 2005, 2006, when there started being serious discussions, we have a pretty large territory. It's the majority of present-day Siskiyou County. And this is one project happening within our territory that's taking like a lot of the oxygen out of the room and a lot of the energy for me and a lot of the focus. But we have other projects that also have work going on that impacts our sites. And so right now for me, it's really kind of triaging, you know, where do I need to focus? Where does my attention need to be? And this is all happening, as I said, in real time. So the Klamath River Project is taking the majority of my time and energy that I have available.
Yeah, I was looking at the map on your tribe's website about, you know, the land that you have. It is large. I mean, it spans like just south of Mount Shasta up past Medford, Oregon, in southern Oregon. Yeah, and you've been at this for decades now. And I know that this dam removal project is taking up a lot of your time and something that you were prepared to do. And it's for your people as well and retaining your heritage and your culture. Now that it's currently underway and you're directly involved with this project, how does it feel?
How does the project feel?
Yeah, after knowing, I mean, you've been preparing and knowing that this was going to happen. And now this year, it's officially underway. These four dams are going to come down. I think the first of four is currently underway this summer.
You know, it's bittersweet. Because of all the things that I just said, it's like you prepare for, you know, spiritually and emotionally knowing that certain things are going to happen, but you don't really know when and where, because back when our people lived there, we didn't have like GPS mapping. So the exact location of burials, for example, isn't really known. The maps were like hand drawn, so it's not an exact science. And so things catch me by surprise, and that's difficult. I do think there are some positive things on the horizon for us. I think having our salmon ceremony again is huge. I think that is critical for our people, and I see the dams coming out as, you know, part of the process for that to happen. There is, you know, a good chance we're going to reclaim some of our land and be able to preserve our culture, educate the public about our history, and basically about the life of Shasta people and our ancestors that lived there. And I think we have some really interesting things planned for the future.
Well, that was going to be my last question. That was going to be my last question. You know, in the years to come, let's just say like the end of the decade, have you begun to visualize what you and the Shasta people will be able to take part in? What these ceremonies and what getting together on potentially reclaimed land, what it will feel like once this project is completed?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that is the piece that I think resonates the strongest with me right now. We've had like some visioning within the tribe, and one of the things that we really want to see is a recreated village that does educate the public, that, you know, tells this is the history of this area, and this is what life was like for a traditional Shasta person back at that point in time. I think we have a lot of really cool things on the horizon that we want to do, but ceremony for me is first and foremost the most important. We look forward to welcoming other tribes to our ceremony as we've been welcome to theirs. So I'm looking forward to all of that.
Sammy Jo, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Sammy Jo Diafontorum is a culture preservation officer with Shasta Indian Nation, sharing her tribe's history on the land that sits under the Klamath Dam Removal Project, a river restoration project that is officially underway after decades in the making and is the largest dam removal project of its kind in U.S. history. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.